Maybe just to start off, you could give us that sort of 5,000-foot broad overview of what sort of questions you were trying to, or the study was trying to answer going into it, and how some of the different components, including yours, fit into that.
Sure. Genomics is advancing rapidly, particularly what's called ancient genomics, in the sense of modern DNA is, of course, also advancing in its ability to understand. But DNA degrades once people die, and the techniques are being developed and advanced to resurrect that DNA so it can be used for various studies, including historic relationships. So this is what this study is about, is looking at Native Americans, North and South Americans, so it's broad in scope, in terms of groups that had eventually migrated to North America and South America.
And so talking about those historic relationships, I guess I'll give you the broad sort of anthropological question of why it's important to understand more about those historic relationships and how those different groups interacted and how that kind of gets us to here. It's part of that story, too.
Well, it's understanding the human story, so that's the broad picture. And the details are in... So there's three groups, three genomic groups. The most recent being 4,000 years ago, are Inuit, Yupik, Inupiaq, Alutig, and they match, so to speak, groups in Siberia. So in other words, they are connected. And there probably was movement back and forth. So, you know, they didn't recognize those national boundaries that we do.
Right.
The other two groups, for convenience sake, they're referred to the northern and southern group. The southern group tracked back to a Clovis-related culture and maybe earlier. And essentially everything south of the Canadian-U.S. border, all Native Americans and Native South Americans. But let me come back to that. The other northern group are all Dene or Athabascans and all Algonquin speakers, so essentially everyone in Canada and Alaska, and probably Navajo, who split off into the southwest. So three broad groups. The latter two, the northern and the southern, are very old. So we're talking in the 10, 15,000-year-old range. So what this study does is it plots individuals, both modern individuals and ancient individuals, and where they fit on that spectrum. And one of the individuals is from Nikiski. A number of years ago, some human remains eroded out of the bluff. And with the tribe, with the tribe's full concurrence, we removed those human remains, and they will be reburied. Some already have been reburied. But in the meantime, the K'naiche tribe authorized that DNA work be done. Essentially, you take a small sliver. You don't need much. Really, you don't need more than a hair, but just a small sliver. And from that, this DNA can be extracted, and it's run through analyzers. And what came out is a match of that individual from Nikiski with the northern group. No surprise there, but you know, at least it adds to the picture.
And so it's essentially just connecting dots. You have these DNA samples from all these different places, and you know approximately how old they are, and then by yeah connecting those dots, you can paint in that picture of how those cultures may have overlapped. And when you begin doing that, then you can really start to tell a story when you start to understand how cultures overlapped.
Exactly. And so in this case, what I've described so far is not new, but what's been found through this more extensive broad study is that the latter two, the northern and the southern group, probably migrated separately and then intermixed at some point in time. So that complicates the picture quite a bit. And we're talking about glacial times, so where glaciers were and how people moved and so on is all part of the story. So the next step is to combine the archaeological information with glacial geology information with the genomic information, and slowly, gradually, we'll get a better picture of the peopling of North America.
This leads me to another big question, because the classic view, and the view for so long, has been this idea that there was the migration from Siberia over the land bridge, and then from north to south it was developed. How well is that theory holding up these days? I mean, studies like this really, I mean, that totally disrupted and upend that.
Yeah, not totally, but majorly. The term is now being used, the Kelp Highway. So both the northern and the southern group probably moved from Siberia at some point in time, with likely a major standstill, that is at least 1,000 years of no movement, and hence there is no group in Siberia that exactly matches either the northern or the southern group, and then a migration down the coast rather than the Beringia interior view that used to be popular 20, 30 years ago. And I like the term kelp highway. It's kind of cool because, you know, we're coastal people and we know about kelp.
That's right, yeah. Well, it's one of those foods are so descriptive, right?
Yeah, exactly. So earlier you asked a little bit, why is it significant? So there's this as well, and that is that Native peoples, at least the Dene peoples, Denaina, Atna, and so on, when elders are asked about these earlier times, they will say, we've been here forever. And in a sense, this is substantiating that. 14,000 years is not forever, but it's pretty darn close. So this has implications for land rights and has implications for why First Nations or First Peoples have land rights and rights that may be different from the rest of us who came much, much more recently.
The time frame question is really interesting, because talking about how long someone has been settled here and then the legal questions that spring from that is one topic, and I want to get back to that too, but the other one that I wonder about is, did anything in this study change overall time frames in terms of how long people have been here, just, you know, in sum total? Or are those numbers still what we've always figured, you know, 10 to 15,000 years?
Yeah, I don't think it changed that. It just added more information to substantiate it. 10 to 15,000 years and probably earlier, but not 30,000 years.
Yeah.
You know, it could push into the 20,000 year range. It's hard to say. You can't tell from the DNA how old it is.
Yeah.
So you can tell through other ways, archaeological techniques primarily, and that usually involves carbon 14 dating. So you have to look at it from different perspectives: archaeology, genetics, and linguistics. And that's going to, when that analysis gets done, that will help understand the picture better as well.
Just to wrap up, I wanted to make sure. So the part that you helped with on this was identifying remains from the Kenai Peninsula that were able to be analyzed and interpreted as part of this study. Is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that part, and I want to emphasize, this was done in complete cooperation with the Kenaichi tribe.
Mm-hmm.
They were in it from the beginning, and it's their people. And nothing would have been done had not the tribe, through its council, said, weighed the information or weighed what could have, what possible information could come. And the man I worked with, his name is Dr. Rippon Mali. He's from the University of Illinois, and he's one of the main people in this genomic work in the world. We met, I think, 5 or 6 times with the tribe, with the council, just being sure everybody was on board, keeping them appraised of where we were at and what we were doing. And several, I think at least 2, maybe 3 public meetings for the tribe to answer any questions that people may have about how this information would be treated. And that's critical. That's important. So they were partners along the way. And in this article that came out, they are acknowledged for their partnership. So it's not scientists running amok over people without their permission. This, at least in this case, it was a complete partnership.
Well, I'm sorry, one more before I let you go, is some of the, I don't know, maybe the, you talked about potentially like practical implications of some of these things in terms of land rights and things in that arena. And I'm curious, are there other places where genomic testing and DNA studies have placed the people there at a certain point, and that has been the foundation for legal action that has changed anything?
In Sami land, in northern Scandinavia, in Australia, in New Zealand, those come to mind where genomic testing has been considered in terms of indigenous rights. So now that's really a different question than the science of it. I mean,
right.
The science can only say this is when and this is where and maybe a little bit of how, but the other questions, the rights, human rights questions, and indigenous rights questions are really broader questions that have to be dealt with separately. But what this can do is contribute to our understanding and from a more accurate understanding of history in its broad sense, we come up with a better understanding and practices of right now. And that's a good thing.